I think just mentally, I knew that there was something else out there for me to further my life and just further my interests and just keep it moving, you know? I guess that's what I'm all about, is just keeping things moving and keeping it interesting.
Welcome, everybody, to Nashville Drummers Podcast, episode 46.
Today's guest is Bo Cuther, the drummer for indie rock band Small Pools.
We had a great conversation with Bo. I love coming into these things a little blind and getting surprised to see the person and meet them and figure out their story. And we talked about a lot of fun stuff, being fellow Scandinavians and our mutual appreciation for MySpace and learning to code. It's awesome.
Yeah, that was before my time. It was a really interesting perspective. We kind of backed it up in terms of the state of the music industry now. And it was cool seeing Bo's journey and the band's journey as an indie rock band that has had to adapt and not only survive in today's TikTok era, but they're thriving. They're kicking off their U.S. headlining tour in April. Mm-hmm. And
in fact, they are going to be playing here April 7th at the Basement East. I'm going to be there.
As
you're going to be there.
And the Whales will be there too.
Yep. And you know who's not going to be there? Squares. Be there or be square.
See, this doesn't make any... Okay, yeah. People have to listen to the episode for that to make sense. Yeah, we talk about the Small Pools live show, and it's awesome. So we hope you enjoy episode 46 with Bo Cuther.
Love and kisses. The world is in your palm now, so take a breath and calm down, because you have been selected. You've been selected. A few will ever find out. And if you don't see why, well, at least you got your nest egg. You got your nest. High class.
Dude. That's right.
We love having Taylor here as our official... What's your title now? Do we have a title for him? Is he our intern? Production intern?
He's our...
That we always joke about?
He's our young Jamie. But right. What do we call
young,
him?
Young Taylor. Yeah.
Young Taylor.
I mean, he's a technical wizard as far I'm concerned.
Hey, would you pull that up?
Let's see if you switch those cables.
He's a macho wizard.
Dude, thank you for supplying the space, the vibes, including this delicious matcha, which I'm loving and is refreshing me deeply.
Yeah. Can we give a quick plug for the tea sponsors? Ellie and Joe Tea. Yeah.
Ellie and Joe.
Based in East Nashville, right?
Oh, dang. Local.
This is a local tea.
It's a local tea.
Ah, yeah, let's go. I'm all about it. It's delicious. This is good stuff. I'm pretty picky when it comes to tea, too. Anyway.
We got a picky tea guy over here.
Yeah. Oh, this guy doesn't just like any tea. Oh, so I give you cinnamon, you're going to give me a problem? Is that what this is going to be? It might be.
Well, we're stoked to have Bo. How do you say your last name?
Cuther.
Cuther. Okay. Yep. That's what I thought.
It's like Luther with a K.
With a K.
I was going to say Ruther with a K. Damn it. I missed.
Have you met many Ruthers?
I have.
Really?
A giant family of them, actually. Some good friends of mine.
All right.
So, yeah.
I don't know if I've ever met a Ruther.
Yeah. Yeah. Luther is definitely more common. I missed the more obvious for the more niche.
Hey,
but
you know what?
That's my personality.
We all come from different backgrounds.
That's true, man.
So you're from Oregon. You're one third of Small Pools.
I am from Oregon. Yeah, from Bend, Oregon.
Bend, Oregon.
Yes.
Never been.
Never been?
Nope.
It's a beautiful place.
It really is.
I recommend a visit at some point. Yeah.
Have you been to Oregon at all?
Nope.
Oh my God.
Never.
You just need to take a trip up the West Coast. Like the coast. You just need to just take a train.
I mean, it's like Tennessee with mountains.
Thank you. Yes, that's what it is. When I moved here and I told a local that's what I miss about California.
Right.
They're like, we've got mountains. I'm like, that's so cute.
But, very cute.
But no, you don't.
No.
Not like that.
No. Yeah, it's nothing compared to, like, the West Coast is just its own thing. That's for sure,
as far
as that goes.
Yeah.
But yeah, Oregon by way of Bend. And then I was in Portland for a long time. That's kind of the move you make. Bend is a very small town. Mm-hmm. So if you want to do anything outside of being a ski bum or living that life, you got to go to Portland.
Yeah.
And so I went there kind of right after college. I only went to 2 years 2 years of community college, and I was like, that's enough for me. And
I'm going to join a rock band.
I want to be in a rock band. That seems like the best decision I can make.
Yep.
I think so. Yeah.
And that's what I did.
Was your family supportive of that?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's cool. Like coming from a family of musicians and music lovers who definitely pushed me to go that direction. And we're like, it's okay. Like it's cool. You know, do your thing. Like yeah. Do what makes you happy, which is hard to come by, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm blessed in that way for sure.
That's awesome. You don't run into that enough. I feel like the attitude that, maybe I'm wrong, but it feels like the right attitude to have regarding that kind of thing is if you don't go for it ever, then you're always going to wonder, what if you did go for it? And that's lame. Like, yeah. That's lame to go to your deathbed that way. Like, if you go for it and it doesn't work, it just doesn't work. That's okay.
Exactly. And really, it's just life. And life comes in so many ways. And there's so many changes and ebbs and flows. And it's like, you never know what you're going to be doing. So you might as well do that now and see what happens. And life will take you in a different direction at some point if it, you know, if that's what it's going to be.
And okay, so you said a musical family and musically interested. What did that look like for you?
Well, my dad played drums, so that was definitely introduced to it at a young age, you know, where he had a kit set up in our old like shed, you know, when I was a kid. And I remember hearing him out there, you know, shredding away and like, whoa, that's awesome. Like, what's he doing out there? And you know, he'd have me sit on his lap and there's pictures of me like when I'm a kid and I'm obviously not, I don't have a clue what I'm doing, but I was very fascinated by it. And he played in the church band. So it was like, I was around and just like crawling on the floor, watching them play. Like it was just a cool world as a kid. And it was like very fascinating.
Yeah, I can imagine.
When you say church band, was it like a bunch of CCM type stuff?
I grew up Catholic. So it was like just the Catholic church band. They were called Trinity. They actually have a vinyl out.
Let's go.
Shout out Trinity. But yeah, like, yeah, it was more just they got together and played, you know, on Sundays and different events. And they actually did some, like, I don't know if you call it touring, but, you know, they went to other places and played. And my mom, like, followed along and helped with sound and all that kind of stuff.
Sounds like a tour to me, brother.
Yeah.
Let's go.
But so definitely introduced to the whole music world at a young age. Maybe that's why they pushed me or said that it's cool to go in that direction.
You know? Yeah. All right, I'm going to ask this because we always ask our guests, do you remember your first drum kit that was yours?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a Yamaha. It was like an 80s Yamaha. I forget which series it was. I want to say it's a Stage.
Stage Custom?
Yeah.
Yeah, dude.
But like, it was an 80s Stage Custom. It was like the toms were super shallow. It was like the weirdest sizes, like 12, 13, 16 with like super shallow rack toms.
Honestly, man, my opinion, I think the Stage Custom punches so far above its weight.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know much about the like older models, but every time I've seen a Stage Custom played at a show, I'm like, that actually sounds really good. And I love the sound of the shallow toms.
Yeah, it was awesome. I mean, I loved it. It was like the best thing. And obviously my dad ended up selling his kit when they had me, I think, essentially. So
wow, way to go.
Yeah,
wow.
I know. I kind of ruined it for everybody, but you know, they had to make ends meet and that was one of the things. So he had to get rid of the drums. But then, you know, when I turned, I think 9 or 10 is when they got me that kit. So
yeah.
I guess I showed enough interest in wanting to do it that they were like, all right. One day after school, it was in my bedroom on my birthday. I was like,
amazing. Yeah.
Wow.
Yes. I think that's our first Yamaha. Usually it's a Pearl export.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. That's been a real common answer. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
What was the finish on that kit?
It was white. Just white, straight up white.
Classic.
The most dangerous of colors to choose.
Totally.
Love it. I love danger.
Why is it dangerous?
Because it looks dirty really fast.
Oh, okay. I never know with you. There's always a deeper meaning.
Oh, no. No, nothing deep there. I'm shallow as can be. Yep. Yeah.
So, yeah, take us through your journey. I mean, obviously, like, just to kind of back it up, I mean, I think a lot of our listeners will be familiar with the band Small Pools. I definitely want to get into, like, you know, touring. You have over 20 years experience touring, and
yeah,
definitely want to get into that journey. But I guess take us back to, like, the first kit, and then you mentioned community college. Were you doing, like, drum lessons through that time as well? Or
so, like, I guess early on it was like I didn't take many lessons. I was like that weird kid that would hang out at the music store and just, like, bug the dudes that worked in the drum department at my little local, it's called Central Oregon Music, but it was the only music store in town. You know, Bend was a small town. So I would just be there hanging out, just pestering everybody. And it was definitely, I never took, like, actual lessons. It mm-hmm. was more like, Steve Tate was the guy who worked the drum shop there, and he would always just show me things and here and there. And then actually in high school, I started teaching lessons, and he let me use a spot in the store to, like, teach out of. And that was a really cool, like, it was just a cool environment, a cool vibe that they let me, like, be that annoying person and, like, yeah. and do that, you know? Yeah. But he definitely, like, showed me the ropes, and he toured a lot, and he was older, and he'd just be like, you know, you got to just do it. And then one day your back's going to give out, and then you're never going to want to do it again. So you got to just keep doing it while you can. And that was kind of his words of encouragement.
Dang. I rebuke that in Jesus' name. Go get your back adjusted.
And then Dave Elitch will show up on your door
yeah.
unannounced.
Get a massage, take care of your hip flexors, and your back's going to last forever. You'll be playing until you're 89 years old, 90 years old. That's what I got to say to that. But I do like all the other encouraging stuff.
Yeah, it's yeah. just, it was a cool place to be and definitely pushed me in the right direction. And
yeah.
I was, like, so interested in so many things, and drums was always one of them, but I was big into sports and, like, skateboarding and snowboarding, all these other passions that I
You're
had.
You're a golfer too, right?
And golf, like, yeah. I did, like, I just, like, when I get fixated on something, I want to, like, do it, and I want to do it good, and I want to do it all the time. And I guess drums is kind of that first thing where it was like, I want to be good at this, you know?
Yeah.
So whatever that, I mean, you know, playing 5 hours a day after school or whatever, it was like, I want to get good. And then and it was always like, on to the next thing. It's like, oh, skateboarding, what's this? I want to get good at that. Like, how do I do that, you know?
Okay, so this is something that I've been thinking about even today. And I was having a conversation about this earlier, and I want to know your thoughts. How do you balance having wide-ranging interests and then continuing to pursue drums?
That's a good question. A good question. I guess drums are always there, and it's always, like, the focal point, I guess, of my, like, my existence or my being as what I am right now. And everything else kind of floats around it, but drums is always the centerpiece. It's, like, the thing I always go back to the most. And like we were talking about earlier, it was like I didn't have a space to play this last year, and that was really weird for me. So luckily Drumbox exists and was
shout out to Jake and Drumbox.
Jake
shout
Drumbox, yeah. Love you, dude. but yeah, like other than that, I've always had drums in whatever house I'm living in, because I've either lived with a bunch of band dudes, and so there was always drums there available to play. So I guess drums was always the center of my attention, if that makes sense.
Yeah, whatever. Everything else might have had some sort of ebb and flow, but drums was a constant for you.
Totally.
That's cool.
And it's the thing that I've, like, wanted to always make, like, me. Like, that's what I want to be. I want to be known as a drummer. I want to be known as, like, this is what I do. But also, like, I love all this other stuff too. So,
yeah,
you know, I think there's room for all of it. Like, I think when you spend enough time on one thing and you go back to another and you're like, oh, I really love that. And then you miss the one thing and you're like, I want to go back to that. So I definitely think there's a good balance to making it all work.
Yeah. And I think all of the thing is, when you, this is kind of my opinion, I feel like as you approach mastery, or even just as you approach, if you're going after one craft for a long time, you'll start to see it and things relevant to it reflected in everyday life and in everything else you do. If you get good at drums, then you know how to get good at skateboarding.
Right.
You know how to get good at bass. You know how to get good. Even if those techniques have nothing in common, guarantee the pursuance of that craft is going to be very, very
exactly. Because you know it takes time, and you know like the time you have to put in to actually, if you really want to master, and I'm not saying I mastered any of these things. I just enjoy them all. And,
Same, yeah.
But
yeah.
There's always, like, you're always striving to be better, but like, yes, drums was the first thing that I was like, I feel pretty good about where I'm at, and it took a long time and a lot of work to get there.
You know?
And it wasn't until like after college and moving to Portland and where I actually felt like, oh, I get it. And you learn so many things along the way. You meet all these sound guys and engineers and people who tell you, oh, this is how you should play. Oh, you know, this is tracking. This is live tracking. This is different. Like you need to, you know, it's different than playing out live. You know, you just learn all these different things along the way. And you're like, oh, I actually haven't mastered this yet. There's still so much to learn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And taking that stuff, figuring out the balance of taking what other people tell you, knowing that they know something you don't know,
exactly.
But then also knowing you don't know exactly the player that I want to be.
True.
But I do.
Exactly.
But you can see something in me that maybe I can't see. So your perspective is valuable. I'm like, it's that whole Bruce Lee, like, take what's useful, discard what's useless. Like that. And that's hard to do.
Exactly. Mm. Exactly. But yeah, I think it's just, just knowing what it takes to get good at something, which is a lot of time, really is what it comes down to.
I couldn't agree more. I think that's why music education is so important. And it's I hate seeing the headlines of all these, you know, school music programs, and it's like the arts is always the first thing to get cut.
Yep.
And it makes absolutely zero sense, you know.
It's so sad.
Yeah. I work a lot with like the marching arts and drum lines and that whole world, and it's like all these kids that grind and pay pretty good amount of money to do like drum corps and indoor
like
drum
through line. The summer and doing all the programs.
And like they leave, you know, they it's called aging out. You kind of graduate from that and they leave, and it's not a mystery. A lot of these kids and students end up with like very successful careers.
Yeah.
Yep. And sometimes, you know, often in music, of course, but just in any field.
Yeah.
Because it's that transferable skill sets,
absolutely.
You know, knowledge.
Yeah, it's a shame seeing like programs like music, which is honestly like one of the reasons I got up to go to school every morning was like to go to band and like have that outlet. And it sucks that it's slowly going away.
Yeah. How do you get the perfect Nashville kick drum tone? It starts with a Lowboy Leather Daddy bass drum beater. This leather-faced beater occupies the sonic space between felt and wood beaters. It's punchy enough to cut through the mix on those four-on-the-floor barn burners with the warmth you need for slow ballads. Okay, but who plays a Leather Daddy? Garrett Goodwin from Carrie Underwood's band uses one. Lee Bryce drummer Donnie Marple plays a pair. Walk down Broadway any night of the week and you're going to hear one. In Nashville, you can test drive a Lowboy beater at Drumbox and grab one at Forks, Drum Supply, or Nelson's. Check out lowboybeaters.com to learn more. So, to backtrack, I want to, because we jumped into the philosophical real quick,
I like
which
it,
I'm
yeah.
all about.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
I'm all about.
Yeah.
And I will take the blame for kind of just prodding that. Like, yeah, let's talk about that stuff. But I do want to hear about like early influences and things like that.
I was going to ask that too.
Yeah. So early influences, definitely my dad's record collection was awesome. You know, my parents had a great record collection. We listened to music as a family. It was always on, making dinner, you know, it was just on always. And I really took an interest, like the Police were like one of the first bands that really like blew my mind, like listening to that music. And I couldn't even comprehend what was happening when I was a kid, like listening to that stuff. And Stuart Copeland is by far one of the most insane drummers, just like how his brain works,
dude.
And where he throws things. And I'm just
his
like,
hi-hat technique
yeah,
alone.
Bro.
I could geek out on Stuart Copeland like for an hour.
Let's do it for just two. Let's geek out on Stuart for just a minute. Just a few years back, I was in my buddy's car and he had been showing his kids the Police, and he kept being like, the Police are great. They're great. And they had that thing where, you know, like they don't get it and they don't care
right.
for a while. And then a few weeks into that, they're like, oh, we get it. And these guys are awesome. And they're singing every song. And we were listening to Message in a Bottle. And he was just, he would rewind it. He goes, listen to that, Phil. Who on earth would play that?
Like, why? Like, how the timing, like, where, like, how do you throw that in? How do you just, like, oh, I'm going to do this crazy on the one and then, like, come in? Like, it's just, it's
alien.
Wild.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, similar to a Steve Gadd. It's like you said, who would think of, only that person would think of, like, those fills and parts.
Gobs of identity.
Yeah. Right.
Identity.
Just throwing splash symbols here and there. I'm just like, oh, like, and that started my, like, fascination with splash symbols. I'm like, I need every size. I need a 6. I need an 8. I need a 10. I need a 12.
You guys make 20-inch splashes? Those are called crashes. Don't say that to me.
They're splashes.
That's a splash. Do you remember the first Police song that, like, lit you up?
Yeah, definitely, like, Message in a Bottle is one of them by far. Yep. I was a big into Spirits and Material World. Like, that's like one of my, like, I remember vivid memories of, I used to go to work with my dad. He was a contractor and would work on houses. He'd bring me when I was a kid and they would always just be cranking the radio and I'd be sanding. He's like, here, just sand this and, you know, stay out of the way. And it just, I remember that song, like, oh, it must have been like when it was hot on the radio at the time or whatever, but it was like always on. And I was like, this song is blows my mind.
Yeah. Did you catch him when he was in Nashville recently?
I didn't. Symphony? I saw that he was here. But
yeah. I went to one night.
Was it awesome?
It was incredible. Yeah. It was really cool. I mean, it wasn't quite like the rock concert experience it probably would have been if it was just him and the Police. You know?
Right. Right.
But it was still really cool to see him.
It's just cool to watch him play. Like no matter what.
Okay, so Stewart, Police,
I mean, that's early days. And then as I started like growing up and figuring out my own identity and stuff, I started getting into like heavier stuff like 311 and Deftones and Incubus and Tool and all that stuff. So like that was like the early high school days. That's like what I was into. So it was like Chad Sexton. 311 was like a god to me at the time. Again, a guy that I thought was like doing really cool stuff that like on rock records that you don't hear very often, throwing all the marching like rudiments and stuff like that in there and making it cool. And I was like, oh, this is rad. Like I saw that band 6 or 7 times in high school. Like, so it was like,
really?
I was fascinated with them. Like they're one of the first bands that I saw and I was like, I want to do that. Like whatever they're doing up there. Like, I don't even know how you do that. Like play that, you know, like Roseland in Portland or whatever. Like, I don't know how you do that, but that's what I want to do. You know,
What was it about that? If you could think back to your mindset, was it like the stage energy? Or
yeah.
The
it was
crowd,
just like just walking into a show like that, like in the late '90s, early 2000s, it was just like the energy was like, it was wild. You know, it just felt surreal and it felt like you were part of something bigger than you or, you know, you just felt like you were a part of this thing that meant something to so many people. Mm-hmm. And like, I remember seeing Incubus because Incubus and 311 toured together a bunch of times during that era. And I saw them probably every time. But, so those are like two of my favorite bands. I just remember like seeing them like drinking a Budweiser on stage. And I was like, dude,
that's what it was.
So awesome.
You can just chill and have a
Budweiser. You can just chill, play drums and drink a Budweiser and people love it.
Yeah, like, get paid for it. Yeah.
Thousands of people will watch you do that and they'll pay money to be present. That's insane.
Yeah. So that was kind of that moment of realization. Like, I don't know how you do this, but I'm going to find out and I'm going to do everything I can to try and do that.
Yeah, man. So then you ended up playing Warped Tour, right?
Yeah,
so, band?
Yeah,
was
so,
it Caddisfly?
Yeah, I was in a band called Caddisfly. Okay. So when I first moved to Portland, when I was like 19, 20, I moved to Portland and joined that band. That's why I moved. Like, we had played a few random local shows together and they're like, dude, you should move to Portland. I was like, yeah, you're probably right. I probably should. And I asked my mom and she's like, you absolutely should. Like, why not? Why not now? And I was like, you won't be mad? She's like, no, absolutely not. They were like fully
supportive.
Wow,
that's pretty
incredible.
Yeah. That's like, and you said you were 19, 20?
Yeah, 19, 20. Like, and they were like, yeah,
I feel like most moms would be like, we're going to have dinner and talk about this.
Right.
Absolutely not, right?
So we all lived in a, like this, the singer of that band somehow's parents signed off like on the lease of this brand new house that had just been built, like in Portland, and they let like four like 20-year-old dudes rent it out, and God bless them for doing that. But yeah,
yeah, seriously, yeah. And we just tore it to shreds. And
yeah. Kind of did. The garage just ended up full of cans and garbage, and you know, the classic young dudes living together. But yeah, that's where we all just like hunkered down and played in our basement and just learned how to be a band and learn how to play and learn how to write songs and, you know, do that whole thing. And then, yeah, we ended up, that was like early, that was like MySpace, early MySpace era. So it was like, we were like, this one dude, I forget who he was. Like we met him somewhere. He's like, you got to get your band on MySpace. Like you got to like create a profile and you can just start adding people from all these cities and like this and that. And we're like, whoa, that's crazy. Like that you just can add people and they'll like your band.
Yeah. It's my literally, those were the glory days.
It was wild.
I found so many cool bands through MySpace music. Oh, so many.
Oh yeah.
Like I words cannot describe how upset I am that is no longer a thing that I can go and do.
Because definitely.
That, yeah, but arguably is the same thing now. We just have maybe split up.
There's just
all these
so many more. There's just so
more
much more.
Complicated.
Yeah, there's so much more thrown at you every day. Yeah. You know, 250,000 songs released every Friday.
Yes. Right. Well, exactly. And Spotify is just like an overload of
right.
that. I'm like, okay, it's like infinite things. And I'll click on something that's a related artist and I go, this doesn't like tickle my fancy in the same way as this thing I just came from at all.
Right.
You know, you would go to the page of whoever it was you were listening to and, oh, these influences. Oh, we listen to this and this and this. Oh, I know them. I don't know that band.
Like, what's okay. that? Yeah.
And then, do they have a MySpace profile? Oh, they do. Oh, they got the music. Oh. Oh.
Yep.
So.
Go to their Pure Volume page. Check
yes!
It out.
Yeah, you know. Pure Volume! Let's go!
Man, yeah, the MySpace was a little bit before my time. Like, I was, I think, maybe just on it and then. Yeah, I guess Facebook took over.
Right. It was the best, man. Build your own page. Learn how to use HTML.
It was like,
be technically
that's
literate.
Where we all learned how HTML worked. We were like, well, how does their page looks cool? We got to do that.
And I got pretty damn good at coding.
What do you mean? So you created a MySpace account and then.
And you had to code it yourself if you wanted to add like backgrounds or anything
awesome,
like
bro.
That.
And like. I got
what kind of user experience is that?
It was, dude, it was genius. It was great. And it's way better than what
the fact that it was so easy to just do that also is crazy that you could just, put on the back end. If you put the code in this one weird box, like it'll change your whole page. Look.
Yes. God, wow. That was so rewarding.
Okay, MySpace.
Yeah, wow. MySpace. Come back. Tom, save us.
Where are you, Tom? You out there?
He's chilling. He is living his best life.
He better be.
Sold that bad boy for a pretty penny and just was like, peace.
Cool. Well, he's laughing at Zuckerberg and Meta today as we're recording this. Both Facebook and Instagram went down for like, 3 hours?
Yeah.
Which that is becoming wild. More of a common occurrence.
Yeah. Sorry about that, guys. That was because Flying
Formation was Nate's
releasing
that's right,
new,
that's right.
a new song, and it just blew the internet up. So,
yeah.
Love it.
Okay, so, yeah, Warped Tour. Take us into that.
So
how was that experience?
So we ended up...
How'd that even happen?
This is crazy, too. Yeah. So back then, you had to, like, we were sending demo, like, cassettes and CDs and, like, VHSs to labels and stuff, because that's how you did shit back then. And... it was like, okay, we got some interest from some labels. And like one day we got put on this, it was website. It was called Kings of A&R. And back then it was like the big, if you got posted on that, like every A&R person was calling you. So we got posted on that for a song we had put out. Got calls from every record label. We're like, oh, this is crazy. Like all we had to do was put a song up and ended up signing with Hopeless Records, which is like a... you know, punk rock kind of indie punk label. Put out two records with them and that led to like 2 years on Warped Tour and like doing that whole thing, which was weird because Caddisfly was definitely like a different band. We were like a mix of all these kind of things, which I think was really cool. I think it was a little before its time and people didn't quite like catch on to what it was. But, we had a lot of great times. We toured for, like 5 or 6, 7 years, and it was awesome. Like, but it was also living in a van and no money and broke and $5 for Taco Bell every day was your per diem. And that's how we lived for almost a decade.
Wow.
Yeah.
Was that your first like true touring experience?
I mean, we did a bunch of like self-booked through MySpace, through reaching out to bands on MySpace and booked our own tours before we signed with Hopeless. So we did do a few, like we booked our own East Coast tour with a few bands that we had met from the DC area. And yeah, ended up just trekking across the country, not knowing what we were doing. We're like, well, we have 12 shows on the East Coast with this band we met on MySpace. Here we go.
Yeah.
Do you remember... Maybe this wasn't your experience. I definitely thought that all of the bands that I loved that I thought were really great and came and just kicked ass. I was like, they're on tour, man.
Right.
They're like killing it.
Right.
I'm like, oh my God. No, they're like just surviving, scraping by.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
That I remember when I got disillusioned to that. I'm like, oh my God. Just because they're really, really good. And they're killing these live shows does not mean that they're making any money. In fact, a lot of these people are going in debt doing this. That's totally crazy.
Oh, you're just trying to survive. Honestly, it's like you go to a show and the show's canceled. The promoter's like, I don't know. Then no one showed up and we're like, we just drove like 7 hours to play to five people. It doesn't matter. And it's just like, oh sorry guys. And it's like,
yeah, sure hope. We had a guarantee.
Yeah, no, that didn't exist because we're just booking them all ourselves. And jeez. And it's like, oh, well, maybe here I can throw you some pizza and some PBR, you know? It's like, okay, great. Like, that's awesome. But also we drove 7 hours to play music.
Yeah.
And
this is why it's good to have a TM who is a 390-pound power lifter. Thank you, Taylor. Not this Taylor, other Taylor. I drum teched for a guy named Virgil Donati for a minute. Okay, yeah.
Okay, of course.
And a guy named Virgil Donati.
Not everyone knows Virgil Donati.
Well, if you're on this podcast, you should.
Well, a lot of people talk about Virgil. He's my hero, but he's not everybody's hero.
Dude, absolutely.
You're right. Yeah.
But
he crushes.
Oh, yeah.
That's awesome.
He's the god of drums. But our TM, my buddy Taylor, 390-pound powerlifter. If we would show up, sometimes venues were like, oh, the guarantee, I don't know about that. He'd be like, yeah, you do.
Yeah, it's there.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah.
Like,
dude, how long did it take to set that kit up? Or did it just come assembled in a trailer and you just pull it out?
So
all right. Sorry to...
No. That's fine. The kit would take me around close to an hour, like 45 minutes to an hour. I kind of, towards the end, I got better at it. I got it down to about half an hour because it came with the rack. The rack would be in multiple sections, but once they were attached, we kept them together.
Right.
And we just could get everything on there really quick.
Right.
Getting that on, but then getting it mic'd, that was the thing. And then he was very particular.
I can imagine.
Something had slipped and they were set to be like permanently, everything is right here, but there was a little bit of slippage and he was like, this is not good. This is not good. I'm like, I'll fix it, but I didn't do it. I'm like, don't be mad. He's just like, oh, okay. We just got to figure it out. We did get it figured out. But yeah, it's a wild time. Anyway.
Love it.
Touring is fun.
Oh boy, isn't it?
Man. So we were talking earlier a little bit about like taking odd jobs, I guess as a segue. So you went from Portland right to LA? Is that?
Yeah. So I was in Portland for, like I said, almost 10 years. I worked, all kinds of crazy jobs. Towards the end, I worked at a brewery called Deschutes Brewery, which is from my hometown. It started in Bend. But then they opened a pub in Portland and I worked in the kitchen for like 4 years there. Doing all kinds of stuff. I actually learned a lot about cooking and how to cook and all kinds of like the chef there was super rad and super gracious and let me tour and come back. And it was like one of those cool jobs where everyone was understanding and,
That's awesome.
Yeah. And then one fatal day I burned my arm with bacon grease all the way. Like literally you can see it's all kind of crazy still, but
oh yeah.
My whole arm was like shredded.
Huh.
So wow. That's when I took a step back and I was like, I don't think this is for me, this kitchen life. My arms are kind of important to me.
Yes.
And that was just one of those like light bulb moments where I'm like, all right, time to make a change. And that's when I started working for this company and then moved to LA working for them.
You were doing what, customer service?
Yeah, it was like a snowboard apparel brand called Holden Outerwear.
Oh, sounds cool.
Yeah, so again, one of my other passions. I was very much into the snowboard scene and world, and this all just kind of fell into my lap, being able to do this with them. And they were like, hey, we're moving to LA. Like, do you have any interest? Like, we really enjoy having you here. And I was like, dude, yeah, I'll absolutely move to LA.
Wow.
So, yeah, it was like, it was that moment of like, all right, time for a change, you know? Portland had kind of run its course for me and ready to see what else was out there, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, what a scary time for most people to make a big change like that.
Yeah.
Right? But it sounds like you were just so, through all of this, you're just like very open-minded, very kind of go with the flow, right?
Totally. Yeah, it was, I think, like I said, like I think just mentally I knew that there was something else out there for me. I didn't know what it was. I didn't know if it was music. I didn't know if it, you know, it could be anything. I just knew there was something else there, you know, to further my life and just further my interests and just keep it moving, you know? I guess that's what I'm all about, is just keeping things moving and keeping it interesting.
Yeah.
I love that.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I think that's the way to be, man. I really feel like it's easy to become stagnant in life. And one of the things about music is, even if you say, like, I'm going to be obsessively practicing. I'm going to practice 8-9 hours a day. Awesome. That's cool.
Yeah.
Like, I'm all about it. You want to be obsessed, baby, do it. But like having a life outside of that is the thing that feeds that creativity. If you don't have a life that inspires creativity, your drumming's going to be uninspired.
Exactly. Yeah. That's a great point.
You could be technical and just sound like ass because you're just totally uninspired.
And I feel like you can tell people who are and aren't. Like, there are some very, very good technical drummers out there. I will never be one of those. But also there are some very, very great, groovy, just play with passion drummers that might not be the greatest, but you sure can't stop watching them, you know?
Yeah. It's like, something about that, like you hear it and you're like, oh, that wasn't hard to do. It's the difference between that's hard to do and wow, that hit me in here.
Exactly.
And that is a disconnect that some of those dudes have. I'm like, hey,
yeah. And especially visually, you can usually tell, right? Yeah. When they're playing from like a place of true passion, inspiration.
Yeah.
I remember talking to Arrington, Joseph Arrington.
Yeah.
He like loves video games and like that really informs, you know, his playing style and how he plays behind the kit.
Yeah, like basically we did a podcast with him the whole time. We talked about video games.
Really?
We talked about drums maybe for like 10 minutes of the whole thing. We're just like talking philosophy and video games.
I love it. But that's because if that's where the conversation goes, I guess, you know, that's where you got to follow it. And that's like what people are passionate about. So,
and that's the same thing. Yeah. If you got a passion, if you got, oh, that's really interesting. Do you have time to switch gears in your life? Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
I feel like everyone has, if you want it, like there are some people that don't want that. You come across people all the time in life where maybe they just, they're happy. They're happy with where they are. And that is great. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
And I think I've always strived to see and do all that I can, you know, while I'm here on earth. So
that's really the way, man. I really do think that's it. There's so much to do and you can do everything, but you just can't do everything all at once.
Right.
You can dip your toes in everything eventually.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Long enough timeline. Yeah.
Totally.
Not the same as it ever was. Sonique Drums is the fledgling but fierce drum and percussion manufacturer based out of the Pinery, Colorado. They started their first year in business swinging and continue to punch up at the percussion industry at large. Sonique Drums is designing and manufacturing new, innovative, and better-made percussion accessories like the NATO 1, an industry-first, continually adjustable throw-off, or another industry-first, the 12-point drum key. Sonique Drums also specializes in steam-bent snare drums, using domestic and exotic tone woods equipped with all brass hardware. You can demo and buy Sonique Drums, original accessories, and snares in Nashville at Nelson Drum Shop, or meet them in person at the Music City Drum Show in July. Check them out at soniquedrums.com.
So, small pools. Let's get into that. So you
small
met them
pools.
During your time in LA.
Yeah, right? So LA happened. It was one of the most exciting times of my life. I was like, you know, doing this big move. I'm like, LA, you know.
And what year
palm
is this?
This is 2012.
Okay.
So, you know, I'm like, I'm going to LA. Like, you know, I've obviously had been there many times, but this was, you know, I had a friend who let me crash with him, and we ended up being, I mean, he's one of my best friends from Oregon, but he was down there, and he was like, dude, you're living with me. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. Like, we're doing this. And I was like, all right. And I was just super stoked on, like, I was happy with where I was. I was like doing something new and different. And, yeah, as far as playing music, my buddy Joe, who was also from Oregon, was down in LA. He had moved down there after graduating college, and him and I went and grabbed a beer like one of the first weeks I was there. And he's like, hey man, I'm like kind of jamming with these two dudes from like the East Coast. Like the music's cool. It's kind of upbeat pop. Like, I think you'd be a really good fit for this. He's like, we played with one drummer and he was not good. And I told them about you, not even knowing if you wanted to do it or not. But like, they were like, yeah, sure, bring him in. And
yeah, I'll love it.
Yeah. Wow. So we all just, you know, we got an hourly rehearsal space for a couple hours and called Bedrock in LA, which is in like Silver Lake. Jammed for a few hours. And I was like, whoa, these guys are like, they're pros. You know, like, Sean, our singer's voice, his voice is so good. And I was just like, whoa, like this guy can just wail. Like I don't even know what we're doing. Like, you know, I'd never been in a band with a singer like that. Mm-hmm. It was just, the pitch was there. It was an interesting voice. And I was like, it was just really cool music. And I was like, yeah, let's do this. So we all went out and had a couple drinks. And we're like, well, should we be a band? Like, is this a band officially? And we're like,
oh.
Yeah, I was like, okay.
Are we dating?
Yeah. Right?
Yeah. It's kind of how it felt.
That's such a wholesome story.
It is, yeah.
That's so crazy.
Yeah, it's like, okay, so like, let's try and do this as much as we can. Obviously, everyone's working and doing their thing and making ends meet in LA.
So were they gigging around LA, or were they just kind of jamming?
They had just kind of done the drive across the country and just trying to do whatever, you know, trying to do music, but also having to work through all of it. And it was just all happenstance where like how it all just fell into place, like how it should. And life doesn't always work that way, but in this scenario, it did.
We often talk about, of course, like the music that has to gel with everybody, but like, you know, we discussed the vibe and the hang. Was that also an immediate, like you just could feel that in the room with these two guys?
Yeah, I think it was just very easy. We were just like, I think we all like came from similar like MySpace worlds of their old bands, and kind of, we all came from the same past worlds.
Yeah.
So it was like, oh, you did that, you were Warped Tour, you toured with that band, we toured with that, you know, it's like everyone kind of knew friends of friends, and like, it just made sense where we're like, okay, we're all kind of like of the same. So this makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just felt right. It was definitely like a learning curve, like anything, getting to know people and whatnot. But I think the initial like hang was like, yeah, this could be done. Like, it doesn't seem like there's any crazy diva attitudes or anything like that. It seems like everyone's just down to make it work.
Dude, that's awesome. And I think we've all had that feeling, you know, the players in town. Like, and I've played with plenty of artists where it's like, yeah, this is a great gig, but maybe I'm not necessarily like hanging out with them.
Right.
Versus like, oh no, this is like more of a, it just feels better, you know?
It feels like we're friends, and now like 10 years into it, we're friends, and you know, as we hang out, and we this band is everything to us still. So definitely I'm happy and again, blessed that it all like just happened. But
dude,
I guess you got to put yourself out there to make it happen. And that's a whole thing. It's like they had driven out across the country to make it happen. And Joe had driven from from Oregon to LA to make it happen. And I was just like, I'm down to make anything happen,
right?
You know?
So yeah, it actually made sense that you guys would meet.
Right.
You know, from different backgrounds or similar backgrounds, but different physical locations. And
totally.
That's why it all gelled so nicely.
Yep.
So that was like 12 years ago, right?
Yeah. So the band started, yeah, like 12 years ago was when we first like started writing. And then...
And so just to fast forward to present day, you guys are in the middle of a headlining tour. Is that right?
It's about to start.
About to start. Okay.
Yeah. About to go out in a month. For a big US
sweet
US tour. We didn't tour last year. We kind of took the year off. We toured pretty heavily in 2022, kind of just right after the pandemic. It was like, well, we got to get out as much as we can.
Yeah.
So we did a couple headliners in 2022, and we went out with Judah and the Lion.
Cool.
We supported them that year. So yeah, we did quite a bit that year, but last year we kind of took the year off and just kind of figuring out what we wanted to do and write a new record and that whole thing. So, and figure out how to like release it. Yeah. Nowadays, it's just trying to navigate through everything and how to release music and what makes the most sense.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. It's so much. My band right now is we're about to release our record, and it's, there's so much that goes into it. Like I thought this all got like easier, more streamlined. Like, well, kind of, but it kind of just got more differenty.
Right.
And now you have to do a different thing.
It's a whole different thing.
Is that a word?
Yeah.
Because, it's kind of stressful.
It's very stressful. And not that it always has been, but now it's just this different, like, I don't even know how you get your music in front of people anymore, you know, trying a new audience. It's like, I know our audience is going to be there no matter what, but it's like, how do you gain new eyes and ears? It's like, it's a whole different world.
Yeah. I was going to ask that later, but we can maybe jump into that a little bit now. Yeah. It's like, cause you guys were a band, you know, we talked about the MySpace era and back in 2012, and how have you guys navigated? Cause you guys have stayed present and current, and you know, now you're on this headlining tour. How have you guys navigated the sort of TikTok era?
That's the thing that we're just starting to get into that. Okay. We signed with a new label early this year, called Network, and they've been awesome. And they've kind of pushed us. They're like, you guys don't have to do anything you don't want to do, but you should definitely like, let's test the waters and see like what's out there. Like, you don't need to be doing stupid dances or what, just do whatever like feels right and feels true to who you guys are. It's like, we're all middle-aged men here, and it's like, right, there's only so many things we can do.
Yeah, right.
So it's like, just trying to ride that fine line of like, what is cool and what is cringe and what is, you know,
yeah,
what's doable for us. So yeah, we're figuring that out right now, and I think we're doing a good job. Just trying to play that game to some degree, mm-hmm. You know, whether it works, I don't know, but we're gonna jump in and try.
Sorry, my brain went when you said what's cool and what's cringe. My brain just became Michael Scott's brain for a second. I was just like, was it better to be feared or loved? I want people to be afraid of how much they love me. Like, I want people to cringe at how cool I am.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah, well, that's cool that it seems like you have a label that's like supportive, because like, you hear a lot of, especially for individual artists, where it's like forcing TikTok and forcing them to almost not be their authentic self.
Right. And
right.
I think they've realized, they're like, they know who we, again, like I said, we're 40-year-old middle-aged, you know, dudes who are like, you can only do so much.
Yep.
And they've just been great. Like it's a great team. We have like, it hasn't felt this way in a long time as far as being with a team that's like where like everything flows really well. We have like a bi-weekly meeting with like the entire team, marketing, A&R, like everybody. I'm like, this
That's cool.
Cool.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, like you guys actually care. And we're all putting in energy to do this together and make it work. And that's cool. So I think it's inspired us to try harder because we're working with people that are trying hard, and it's like, okay, well, let's do all we can.
Having a team that is passionate about the thing is so cool.
It's so important.
It's so cool.
Yeah. And it doesn't happen. We've been in scenarios where that's not the case. So
most of them are that way. Most of the scenarios are that way. Yeah, like they're like you'll either have like casual indifference or like sometimes in a lot of cases just straight up annoyance. I'm like, I don't even want to think about that. I'm like, but aren't you on the team? Yeah, whatever.
Right.
I need really, really want someone to like jump into the deep end with. That's what you need.
Yeah, and it's cool. So far it's been a great experience. We've put out two songs. We have a song coming out Friday.
Awesome.
Another one. And that's
what's
kinda,
it called?
Fake a Happy Face. Fake a Happy Face. Friday. March 8th.
So yeah, it should be out as this
Friday.
Before this is out.
Yeah. Yeah, this won't come out. It'll be out way before this airs.
Or not. We'll edit this quick probably.
But it's again, going back to like how to release music and how to do that, it's like we're kind of just doing the singles thing and doing like three or four songs and then doing half the record. And then so like an EP and then another three or four singles throughout the summer. And then the entire, record will come out like in the fall. So kind of just elongate the game and just give every song a chance to like live on its own and see if it reacts or whatnot.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Totally. Yeah. And then you package it all together at the end. Here it is.
Here's 36 singles. And then, okay, Morgan Wallen, here's the album.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I've already heard 8 of these 10 songs, but whatever. You get a couple new ones and it's still fresh and new. And then you get the vinyl and you can do all, there's things you can do around it to make it exciting still.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that goes into like the whole social media and, shortened attention spans.
Yes.
And you can just like, here's one song. Here's like so many of the artists I follow. It's like, their feeds for like a whole month will be like one lyric even.
Yep.
Or like, here's the chorus. And then next week, here's verse 2.
Yep.
Like they'll tease one song for like a month. That's like pre-save, comment this, and I'll DM you the pre-save link. I mean, some pretty cool, like nimble strategies that I'm seeing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I don't know how successful those are, but it seems to be working, if you want that engagement.
Yeah, it seems like that's the name of the game at this point in time, and the game keeps changing. So yeah. I don't know what it will be in a year or two from now, but right now this is...
If TikTok will even be legal here anymore or what?
Right.
Or maybe it'll be the only thing that's legal.
Whoa. Grocery store, illegal.
That is the most Nate thing you could say. That doesn't make any sense.
Pool party? Illegal.
Illegal.
Parents, illegal. TikTok, legal.
Legal.
Yeah.
Use it up, baby.
Crime.
Crime is also legal in this reality.
The Purge.
Oh my, great movie. Yeah. I love that movie.
I've still never seen that
movie. Oh my God, it's so good.
A movie that I've seen that you haven't?
Whoa.
That's
holy
first.
Holy shitballs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That really is. That may be, actually that might be,
that might
I
be
think that's
first.
The second time.
Is it?
That's a sec, yeah. But it's definitely a rarity. That's weird.
I mean, it's good. Yeah. I highly recommend.
Is that, I think, okay, never mind. I was going to break off on a tangent. On I'm not going to allow myself to do that.
So regarding releasing songs, and I'm curious if you don't mind sharing some of the writing process.
Oh,
because
yeah.
Like with it just being the three of you, like you're pretty involved. You're a writer, right?
Yeah.
You're also, you do background vocals too.
Yeah,
like you're not just the fill-in drummer. Right?
Absolutely. No, yeah,
which is super cool.
I'm in the band, 100%. So it's definitely a democratic partnership, every song is written, songs coming and start different ways, but for the most part, we're all involved at some point in the process, whether it's someone had a lyric or a idea and they're like, hey, let's work on this. And it's like, okay, then we all kind of flush out that idea. For this record, we brought in just a couple writers into the room just to help. Like, we stumbled upon this cool sound with Night Shift, which was the first single we put out. And we were like, we kind of want to follow in that footsteps and make sure we're keeping within this realm of like sound and like instruments, not going too crazy. And like, we really wanted to we tried to like be as thoughtful as possible, as like putting this cohesive sound and record together. So we brought in a couple guys that we're friends with. Our buddy Colin, who plays in Third Eye Blind. He's the touring guitar player.
Oh, so cool.
Yeah, he's a great writer, and like he's an awesome dude. And then our friend Mitchy, who's in the band called Lovely the Band, is in on a few songs. So we're trying to keep it just this tight knit. This girl Zoe, who's also a great writer from LA. So I think those are the three like outside writers that we've brought in for this batch of music, and kind of it's just helped like streamline everything. And because writing's so weird now, like back in the day, it was like we would get in a room like this and everyone would set up and we'd jam and just flush out parts.
Yeah.
And that's just not like how things are done or we do things really anymore. Sometimes we do, like if we have time or if we're sound checking and we're on tour and we can like work on a song a little bit, we'll do that. But like for the most part nowadays, it's like, someone has a song idea or a riff or whatever. And we go, you know, Mike, our guitar player, has a studio in LA and he's produced this whole record. And it just starts like that. And just sitting in his room and trying to flush out ideas. And then it's all like backwards now. And then it's like drums are the last thing that's tracked. It's like, we just play finger drums to write. And then
Okay,
and it's wild.
I love what you just said, because you're like, because we will make time if we're on tour, like we're actually together, we'll just like jam on something.
Right.
And I feel like because the writing process for most people has changed to the more digital, like, oh, well, I can maybe like I can plug into my DAW and just record a riff, and then I can just program drums or program keys, whatever. And you can write the riff.
Totally.
Before you play it. Like that's Fly Information, my band that's about to put out the new record, we've already written our third. And we got together in a room, and the whole thing, like we were writing like a song a day, and we're programming these parts and then learning them after the fact. And that's so weird. It's really cool, but I'm like, I always want to make time. And I saw recently how you must make time to do it the old-fashioned way.
Right.
You must make time to just jam it out. Having moments like, oh, I didn't realize how cool that was until I played it.
Exactly.
That's,
and
you
sometimes
can't have it that
way. Like cool things happen when you're just jamming, and like I miss those 100%. Like happy accidents.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
But you know, it just is what it is. And it's still like, for me, when I track drums, it's like, obviously we finger drum and program everything, and then I'll go in and track and play everything pretty similarly, but obviously fills and stuff, I'm going to try and give way more life to, and just breathe a little bit of like realness into them and make them feel human, you know, and make the whole thing just have that human aspect to it. It's like a diagram where it's like the parts are there, but you know, I can kind of ebb and flow around it, cut around it, do maybe a little sprinkle here, you know, sprinkle a little something over here. But for the most part, it stays what we wrote or, you know, typed out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool, man. It sounds like a very organic process still.
Yeah.
It's cool that you guys have been able to adapt, but also like it's, like you said, very democratic.
Yeah.
Like, you know, where it's not like one person is like, no, this idea is not valid. It's like, if you have an idea, you bring it in, you guys work it out. And
exactly.
That's pretty cool to hear.
Yeah. So it's a cool process, and it's been a fun year because we kind of did the whole record back in LA, which is like kind of going back to where it all started.
Yeah,
so it's
yeah.
like that fun feeling of like, oh yeah, we used to go here after rehearsal, or we'd go here after the studio. And, you know,
did you do some of those?
Oh yeah. Oh cool. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Are those, can you disclose the
like, yeah, there's a bar called The Woods. It's in Hollywood. It's Mike and Sean, our singer and guitar player, lived together in an apartment that was like right behind The Woods. So we spent way too many nights at The Woods, but definitely made a visit there a few times over these last couple months.
And is it the old crew still working there?
No, it's all different.
All different.
Yeah. But the vibe still, it still smells the same. It's still like...
yeah, yeah. Like it would be validating to walk in though and have them go, where you been?
Yeah.
But, yeah, you know, can't have everything, I guess.
Yeah.
At least I can't.
Yet.
Nate always looks at the camera at least once and says something very provocative.
It's actually even more rewarding now that Taylor's over here.
Yeah, yeah.
It's
so, because you get a reaction.
Yeah, it's so good.
Poor guy. Yeah.
I'm just, I'm like, I just plaster your reaction onto whoever, whatever poor soul is looking at my face.
Hey, drummers. Do you need a place in Nashville to practice on actual drums? Drumbox is Nashville's newest drum practice studio. Book sessions online and get the space to yourself. It's fully equipped with two kits, cymbals, hardware, and even sticks are provided. 30-minute, 1-hour, and 2-hour sessions are available at www.drumbox.space. And use the coupon code NDP25 for 25% off your first session. Again, that's www.drumbox.space.
So you got tour coming up in April.
Tour coming up April.
Yeah, how's that looking? Is that across the U.S.?
Yeah, it's a full U.S. Starts in Atlanta. Second show is actually in Nashville, April 7th at the Basement East.
Oh, sick. Cool. Okay, I would love to come to that.
Yeah,
I was going to ask about how the live show is structured, how you guys think about the live show in terms of, you know, tracks and lighting and stage energy. What do you? Because I haven't seen you guys yet.
It's
so
definitely
what is,
like a
what
production.
Is the small pool
it's definitely
experience?
A production. Yeah, I mean, we were very, again, to use the word blessed, but blessed early on in our career. We had a great booking agent who got us on tour with 21 Pilots, Two Door Cinema Club, Walk the Moon, Group Love.
Yeah, baby.
Neon Trees.
Dang.
So like we early on saw all these awesome bands putting on insane shows and we're like, oh, okay, so
this is how it should
this
be.
This is how it needs to be. And it was a lot of work to like, okay, we need to start implementing these moments into our set and coming up with crowd interaction things and things to just make the show interesting for an hour. And yeah, like I said, just being able to watch those bands play every night and like, okay, yeah, we can do this, we can do this. Like, so now, yeah, it's definitely a small pool show is definitely a wild, it's a wild show. It's,
yeah,
we got the, you know, the whole light show. Our LD has been with us for 10 years almost. So yeah, I work with him a lot on putting the live show together and the lighting package and just the looks of every song and stage look and all that kind of stuff, which is really fun. Like it's something I really enjoy doing is putting like the show together.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you have a favorite moment from the set, if you can recall?
I mean, one moment that like everyone knows is we have a song called Killer Whales and we throw out like inflatable killer whales into the crowd.
Of course,
yes. People bop them around and nice. It's like it's a moment that everybody looks forward to. Yeah, we have a song called American Love where we have a xylophone and our singer and bass player have a xylophone battle.
No
like
way.
With colored drumsticks so and cool. The lights like flash on them and it's like it's
see,
fun.
Music education. It all starts in the band room.
It really
you never
does.
Know where that xylophone marimba is going to come into play.
Exactly.
I need to learn to play that.
How many
octaves
is a xylophone, you know? Is it like a full thing?
No, we actually pull off the ones that aren't needed.
Oh, really?
Just so no one hits the wrong.
Yeah, okay.
Hey.
That's brilliant.
No
actually.
Shame in the game.
There are no wrong notes because they don't exist.
Yeah, they don't exist.
You can't hit them.
Hey, no, but really, there aren't any. We got rid of them.
You can't hit a bad one.
There, honestly, there should be a law. We just need to get rid of all the bad notes.
You and the laws today.
Yeah.
Trying to change the government or something.
Oh, yeah. Big freedom guy all suddenly asking for a bunch of laws to be put in place.
It is Super
about
Tuesday.
About music,
so,
too.
Yeah, here we are.
You're it's Tuesday. Yeah, exactly.
So good. But yeah, we try and make the show as exciting and fun and try and change every tour while also keeping those moments that everyone like goes to the show, even if they've seen the show 20 times, like they go there cause they're like waiting for that whale to get thrown out or they're waiting
cool.
for, you know, they're like they, so there's certain things that we just have to keep in the show, but then obviously with new music and introducing new music into the set, it's like trying to create new moments and new things to keep people on their toes.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. Those moments that have stuck around are kind of like old friends.
Exactly.
You know, like I know we're going to meet a whole bunch of new people. We're going to hear new songs. But then at the end, we get our old friend.
Exactly.
We get to smack the killer whales around.
Exactly.
That's awesome.
Yeah, we were just talking like The original idea, like back in the day when I was like, oh, if we're ever like a stadium band, I just want like hundreds of like little miniature, like inflatable ones to just like fall from the ceiling. But that never got to that point. So we're like,
not yet.
We just do one giant one and we like, we tag it up with like,
take
whatever.
That, Taylor Swift.
Yeah. Right. We tag it with like whatever city we're in and like do something, you know, so people keep it and it's like a keepsake thing and yeah. It's fun.
That's so cool. Yeah. I mean, we talked about that with pretty much every live drummer that's been on the podcast. I mean, you know, Rob Bodley comes to mind, especially.
Yes.
I don't know if you know Rob.
I don't know.
He plays for, you know, the Foxies.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Indie rock band. They're based out of Nashville.
Yeah, yeah. I've never met Rob, but yeah, I definitely know, like, Foxies.
He's very intense, great drummer, but his whole thing is about the live show. And, like, it's not good enough to just be a great drummer, a great band, just play song. Next song.
You got it.
It's got to be something more. You know?
It's got to be a performance.
Especially, obviously, if you're on tour and like you're going to new cities, it has to be a new experience, you know?
Absolutely.
How can you create memories?
Yep. Yeah. It's just what it is because people, you want those people to come back. Like that's the whole goal, is to keep people coming back and watching you the next time you're in town. So it's like, you have to wow them. You have to give them a show, you know?
Well, that's come back. Or it's like, why is that person who maybe went to one show and that's all they're going to see? Why are they going to stream your music?
Right.
Buy your merch, you know?
Yep. Say, tell a friend, oh, I saw this great show, you know?
Yeah. Because it's all about storytelling, right? They're going to remember like the story that was created for them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Let me ask, do you have some long time, like fans who have been coming to your shows for years?
Oh yeah. Yeah. There's definitely a handful that have been there since day one and they've probably seen the show 20 plus times.
How does that feel?
It's cool. Like they're like friends now, you know, where you create that bond and you see, it's like, oh, hey, you know, you're just
Gary.
Yeah.
What's up,
good
man?
To see you. You know, it's like, how's life? How's school? How's this? You know, whatever it is. It's like,
did any of those start as kind of like, who is this weirdo? And then you're like, oh, they're actually kind of cool.
Yeah. Not me. Just like, oh, okay. And then it's like, oh, they're at the next one. And then, then 10 years go by and it's like, oh,
yeah.
Now we're all in the same boat here. Like, you know, everyone's just trying to live and have fun and enjoy the things they want to do. So, it's pretty funny. It's endearing. And I never thought I'd be in a band where that's the case. But yeah, we have some super fans.
Yeah. How cool and how rewarding, man.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, I first heard of Small Pools. I think it was it might have been your first year. I was in college.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember specifically just one of my college friends, like, that might have been, honestly, it might have been like dating somebody in the band, or maybe it was like a relative, or it was like a third degree of separation.
Right.
And that's when I
started. Where'd you go to college?
Small school in New York.
In Albany. New York. Our singer is from, he went to, is it SUNY Albany?
Yeah,
that's the school. That's where he went to college.
Okay, so that would make sense. That's the next connection.
He's from like Westchester, like just outside of the city, like an hour.
Okay, yeah.
But so that could be the connector.
Yeah. So your song, it was Dreaming, right?
Dreaming, yeah.
You guys had that remix with the Chainsmokers, right? How did that come to be?
That was crazy because it was before the Chainsmokers were anything.
Okay.
Like, they were like just getting started and they were known at that time for remixing like indie pop songs.
Right.
Like, that's what they were doing.
So they were lashing onto you.
Yeah. Like our manager reached out at the time and was like, hey, like, would you guys, and they were like fully down. They were like, oh yeah, absolutely. And then fast forward a year and they're like the biggest thing in the world.
Yeah. But
that's where they got started, was just doing remixes of.
Do you guys still work with them and do you pursue those other collaborations now?
We actually, we haven't worked with them in a while, but on their first full-length record, we wrote a song. It was actually going to be a Small Pools song that they ended up hearing and wanted. So we're like,
here you go.
It's probably better in your hands than in ours at this
point.
Is
that how that works?
Wow. Yeah.
Here you go.
And they ended up playing it on SNL, like when they did SNL. Cool. So they played.
Wow.
Yeah, that was cool. It was really cool.
But I bet also kind of weird feeling.
Yeah, it was weird.
Yeah.
But also cool. It was like, well, at least it's getting played on SNL.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it could have just sat. Maybe we would have never even put it out ourselves. You know, who knows?
So like you guys aren't credited on that? Like it's their song?
We're writers on
it. Okay, cool. Yeah, I was going to say.
For sure. And they changed the production and, you know, they changed it up, but like.
Yeah, that's super cool.
Yeah.
But that was your baby. Wow, how cool.
Yeah, it's just a weird moment in time where we're like, we're not super attached to this song. It's really cool. And if they want it, then yeah. By all means.
It's a good opportunity for both.
For us, especially at the time where we're like, they're obviously mega artists and we're still trying to, you know, do our thing. So it's definitely beneficial and they like the song and how was that?
Yeah. So speaking of SNL, just made me think, have you done any of those TV shows or big?
We did Jimmy Kimmel.
Okay.
Early on, like we were like fresh off our first, playing our first like 10 shows ever. We did a tour with a band called San Cisco, in 2013. That was like our very first tour ever. And we came back from that and yeah, we did Jimmy Kimmel or no, we were on tour with Walk the Moon. I take that back. We had done a couple, but yeah, it was still very early on. So we did Jimmy Kimmel. My parents came down from Oregon. They stayed at the Roosevelt, which is the hotel right across the street from the studio where it's all filmed. And yeah, it was super. My dad was like, he loved it. Like he was like in hog heaven. He's like, this is amazing. You know, just like,
wow.
Yeah. It was super fun. And it was cool to have them be there and see it all happen.
Was that sort of like an I made it moment for you?
It was. That was like, I was like, if I died tomorrow, like this is great. You know, like wow. I did everything that I set out to do, I guess.
Wow, man.
And my parents got to see it, which is cool.
That's special.
Yeah. And then we did, when our record came out, we did Seth Meyers.
Sweet.
In New York. So that was fun. That was 2015. We did that.
Okay.
And that was again in the middle of a tour. So it was like flying there overnight to do it and then get back on tour. So it was a little stressful. So it wasn't quite the reveling in it moment, but it was still like insanely awesome to be there and do it all. For sure.
Yeah, man.
My experience with those shows is like having that feeling of, and I wondered, I haven't played one, but just being present at a taping.
Oh, it's the most stressful thing in the world.
Oh, I bet.
That's what everybody says, yeah.
I've heard nothing but that. It's like, it's terrifying. Awesome, but terrifying.
Right. I've done the small, you know, the local Today in Nashville thing.
Right.
WSMV, Channel 4. I've done that twice. The second time wasn't as nerve-wracking, but both times it's like, when that camera's it's on, like, the red light's on.
Yeah, they're like, okay, you have 3 seconds. And when that,
I forget how to hold the sticks. Yeah. I'm like, what is drums? I just,
exactly.
Get it. Yeah, it's a weird feeling.
Do have that moment of panic where you're like, how do I do this? what song are we playing?
Yeah. Sorry to interrupt.
No, that's basically it. But yeah, do you have that? No, I don't know. Maybe I'm the only one. I have this thing where I'll forget the entire set until 5 seconds before I'm supposed to play. I'm like, I don't remember any of these songs.
Like, I blacked out. Where'd I go?
Yeah. How's this one start? Oh, yeah. Okay. Got the set. Yep. And just, okay. Yeah.
Why are there two cymbals on this? Oh, it's a hi-hat? What do I do with this?
What are these?
Yeah, that's... I don't think I've ever seen anything like this before.
Yeah, that's literally...
That's like an SNL skit or something.
That's literally your drum set, man. Yeah. That can't be true. This, I've never seen any of these before. They have your name on it, man. Etched into the wood. It's your signature series snare. That's not me. That's not my life.
Someone actually manufactured this thing? Wow.
Wow. What a loser. Anyway.
Okay.
Sorry.
We went really deep into that.
That was a real deep random diatribe that you just let me
go
on. I apologize. Kind of. You've heard of Drum Supply, but you gotta see their shop. It's a drum shop experience like no other. They're packed with all the gear a working drummer needs, and so many parts, noise toys, and accessories. It's a toy store. Curated cymbals, kits, and snares. The hands-on percussion room is nuts, and their custom shop work is fast and affordable. Andy and the guys know their stuff, and they're ready to help. And the big news? They've just moved to an awesome new location near the corner of East Trinity Lane and Dickerson Pike. Still in East Nashville, just a couple miles from their old spot, the all-new Drum Supply is twice as big, featuring a dedicated cymbal room, a lesson space, and even more drum gear than ever. Go see the new Drum Supply shop for yourself, now open 11 to 5 at 2211 Dickerson Pike, and online at drumsupply.com.
related to tour? I mean, what's your current setup looking like?
Current setup, I'm playing a Masters of Maple custom kit. Masters of Maple, yeah.
That's the brand out of LA, you said?
Yeah, they're based in LA. Sahir has been around in my life for a long time, building drums for me and being just a good influence and helping me along the way. I'm a pretty meat and potatoes guy. Like, I went from, like, when I was a kid, I need 15 rack toms and every splash and, like, yeah, 13 cymbals. And then we started touring and I was like, I'm not setting this up every night. So I just started slowly getting rid of things and taking things away. And now playing a 4-piece kit with 2 cymbals, you know,
one up, one down,
ride 2 crashes.
Yeah. But what happens when you have a drum tech? We'd be like,
I mean, if I ever had a drum tech, which I did, there was one tour we had a guy that was helping out, but I was still setting my stuff up every night. He was more just tearing it down at night. But I don't know. I would add a few things.
Yeah.
I would add a few things.
Yeah.
For sure.
What would you add?
I would add, you know, those stacks are so popular these days. I'm like, I'd throw a stack in there just to spice it up.
Yeah.
And maybe a splash of some sort just to, again, I love those little fills and you just throw those.
Oh yeah.
They're just in there. No one really notices,
yeah.
You know, but it's there.
The drummers will notice.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yep.
You'll get the praise from the drummers. It'll be like, dude, bro, nice splash.
Yep. Yep. This is going to get me chicks. False. This is going to get you the attention of drummers.
Yes.
Or a Zildjian endorsement.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go.
So, you have a Vic Firth endorsement.
Vic Firth and Peisty and nice. Masters of Maple. So I've been with Peisty for pretty much since Mulpool started. Nice. And I've been with Vic Firth since like 2007 or 2008.
Okay, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. That was the first endorsement I ever got, which was really cool. Actually, like, the A&R dude at the time came up and found me after a show, like a Warped Tour set, and was like, dude, that was awesome. You're like, so good. Like, the classic, like, story, you're like, does that actually really happen?
Yeah. Like, there's no way. Yeah.
But it actually, he's like, we need guys like you. Like, what do you want? I'll send you, like, I'll get a box out to you, like,
incredible.
Tomorrow. I was like, what? Like, is this real?
Wow.
I'm like, who are you? Wow.
Because I work for Pearl, so I kind of come from that background of the industry and sponsorships. And I don't think that really happens like that anymore.
Yeah, I mean,
maybe there's some cases, but
it was so weird.
That's pretty special.
And like, I was like, wait. And that my whole band at the time was like, is that real? I'm like, that's the guy. I'm like, and funny story is literally I had emailed that guy like 8,000 times. Like... And it's just funny, like, it's so funny to me that I'm like, at least 10 emails to this guy, you know, realistically, 10 times I wrote him, like, I'm in this band, you know, whatever, we just signed, but we're on tour, like, nothing.
Yeah.
And then just, he saw the show and was like, I want to send you sticks. I'm like.
And there you go, the power of the live show.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yep. And not to say that endorsements are everything, because they absolutely are not. They're as much supposed to be a benefit for the company as much as they are for you.
Totally.
It's a partnership. Yeah. But if you are trying to do that, if you are trying to land an endorsement and that's something you need for whatever reason, and you're not getting a response, don't take it personally.
Yeah.
These guys get a million bajillion emails every single day.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. Or like, you know, what are you putting in the email? Is it just text or put in some live footage? You know?
Yeah.
Well, maybe, can you stand out?
And maybe the moment they come and see you play, they go, wow, you kick ass. That was awesome.
Because you can see you personality too. Like email, it's like a resume. You don't get anything just from that.
Right.
You
need the interview.
That's very true. Very true.
Yeah.
You need that personal experience to just like get a feel for somebody and just like an interview.
Yeah.
That's a good way to put it.
Mm-hmm.
Side note question. Masters of Maple. Do they work only in Maple?
No, they have all kinds. Like
knew it.
It's funny. They like. I don't
we
even
were all thinking that.
I don't even own a Maple kit.
For <snow was. laughs>
Okay. Mine, it's gum and mahogany. Like,
there we go. Let's go.
Hybrid.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's a mouthful for the brand name. So they need to just stick with one. That makes sense.
Exactly.
Well, I mean, I love it. It's mom.
Yeah.
There you go.
This is the little pin right there.
Oh, that's
shout
cool.
out.
Yeah.
Sahir, for you, baby.
That's very cool. Yeah, I like that. That top you have on, what's that say? Kuthmania?
Oh, that's my last
Kuthmania?
Name.
Kuthmania?
Yeah, that's a stupid high school name that now as a 43-year-old man still wear on my jacket.
I love it, dude. And I was going to comment on your patch over here.
Yes, Norwegian.
I see that you are a fellow Norwich boy.
Yeah?
Let's go.
Nice.
Taylor's giving the hand signals.
We got three in the house.
We got it, yeah. You can smell the lutefisk on us.
The what?
Lutefisk. What is you that? Don't want it.
Okay, yeah. That'll be next time.
It is fish soaked in lye.
Oh.
It's amazing. What you do want is lefse.
Oh, yeah.
My wife, who is Hmong, she was like, I've been a bad wife, which is not true. She's an awesome wife. She's like, I've never learned to make the food of your people. And she learned to make lefse this year. And it was the best gift ever.
Oh, that's
awesome. Shout out to Michelle.
There you go.
And now you owe her a new iPhone or something?
Dude, now I need to learn to make the food of her people.
Yeah.
There you go.
Good luck.
Yeah, she's
I want to go.
She's a great cook.
My mom went a few years ago and she still wants to, because she's the Norwegian on her side. But yeah. There's a whole town where my grandfather and his grandfather was from, it's the whole thing. Oh. So it's like, I want to get back there and like check it all out.
I do too.
Yeah.
I want to take my dad.
Yeah.
That was,
it's like, I have to go with my mom.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't go without her.
Yeah. I think that's in the next few years. That's a big boy goal right there. I'm calling it right now. Next 3 years, taking my dad to Norway.
There you go.
Let's go. It's on the camera. It's on the mic.
Boom.
All right. Well, we're talking food. I'm all about segues. I love segues.
Nice.
Because most of our wrap up questions, quick questions usually involve food.
Ooh, nice.
So let's start there. What are your go-to spots in Nashville? Yeah, Nashville.
Go-to spots in Nashville. Yeah. You know, you probably hear all these same ones, but like...
You'd be surprised.
Really?
Yeah.
I love El Fuego.
So like, that's the first?
It's my favorite, first. Like, you know, just Mexican food.
Yeah.
But the margs are... It's like they're $5 margaritas and they're delicious.
That's over in East, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. It's got what got me is their marketing. They have the fence and it's painted. And I remember when they first painted this fence, I was like, what? It's like beautiful red and yellow and orange. It's like, it's super colorful. And I was like, whoa, what is, and I turn, you know, driving by, I'm like, what is that? I got to go to that place. That fence looks too cool. Like I got to check it out.
Any place with a fence like
all about
that?
The fence.
That's going in the book.
But yeah, that was honestly just driving by. I'm like, I need to go check that place out.
Yeah.
And now I love it.
One you drink faves. Coffee?
I do.
Yeah.
I'm
intrigued.
I lived by Sump forever.
Okay.
Oh,
last year.
God
so that
bless
was like,
it.
That was my joint.
Nice.
Oh.
Yeah, definitely. I would meet Jake there quite a bit from Drumbox. We'd have coffee.
Yeah, he loves
over there.
Coffee.
Sump rips.
Yeah, Sump's
that's great coffee.
So good. Yeah, I lived in one of those buildings for 9 months.
Dude, that
months.
Whole area is so cool.
It's crazy.
The,
it's like
the
a whole
volleyball,
little
city. The sandbar, the restaurants. Yeah. Yeah, one city. Yeah, literally.
That's true. Yeah. Did you know? I did not know this, but I saw an Instagram post. You know the little pavilion in that like square where there's a stage and that like whatever that thing is?
Yeah.
It's 3D printed. That's the
what?
Biggest 3D printed thing in the country.
No
what?
Way.
Yeah.
That's I had no idea.
Insane.
Yeah, I had no idea. I saw an Instagram post. I was like, wait, I'm like, I lived right next to that thing for 9 months and never, I just thought it was made
Taylor,
out of
can
metal.
Can you fact check that?
I don't know what it
is. You're fired.
He's not fired.
Yeah. But okay, I always thought like it was, yeah, like metal, like rusty. Like,
yeah, I would never have thought that.
Yeah. But it's not.
Wow. Okay.
So okay. Fun fact of the day.
Yeah, okay. Wow.
So that favorite, dang, dude. Okay. So
El Fuego and coffee.
Why this is the first time we've asked, and you did it, so God bless you. You asked about coffee. Why have we not asked about that?
Yeah.
Coffee is my favorite thing.
Yeah. There's a lot of good spots around.
There's too many.
There really are.
Obviously, Dose is good.
I feel like I've seen you over at Elegy.
And I've been to Elegy a bunch, obviously. Shout out to those guys. Elegy, those are all my dudes.
We're going to get Andrew on this podcast.
Oh, nice. Andrew, you're next.
There it is.
Can't stop the train. Okay, got to ask. Actually, I'm going to depart from the food question. No, you got a two-parter. I'm doing a two-parter. Damn it. All right, here's my two-parter. Do you do the hot chicken?
Like, as like a thing, just in general?
Yeah.
Like, do you do, like, how spicy do you go?
I can go pretty spicy.
Yeah.
And funny enough, my friend Josh just got the spice kit from Hot Ones.
Oh,
like, you can get the kit now, and they send all the bottles. Like,
didn't know that.
And we're doing it next weekend.
Yo, so that's cool.
We're doing the whole Hot Ones challenge next weekend.
Man, we should have done the podcast during that.
That's
right. That actually, I think there's a podcast.
There
they
is
do that
already. Yeah, exactly.
So someone should definitely start one.
That was the joke. Yeah.
I wonder if you did that, if you would just get straight up sued. You're like, no, I'm just, and no, like, I'm marketing
just like
you.
Wings and podcasting.
And I'm just using your kit and talk about the hot. I'm just, from Hot Ones. Would they be mad or would they be glad? Who knows?
Mad or glad.
And the second part is, what in the last year has been your favorite purchase under $100?
For anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be drums or music related.
I stole that question from Tim Ferriss. I love that question.
Wow.
It's got so Tim much Ferris. Cool information. Yeah. I do love
so
Tim
does Taylor.
Dude, that is
my guy.
I don't know. I don't buy a lot of things, and especially cool things.
Yeah.
This is a stumper. I'm like trying to think because I'm trying to go back in my brain. Like, what have I even purchased in the last
Should
while?
We answer? Would that help you maybe inspire?
Yeah, you guys go.
We've never answered that. I'm trying to think like what mine would even be.
Ooh, for me.
You said in the past month?
No, past year.
Past
year.
Past year.
Yeah. I'm trying to think.
No, I do mean 365 days, not like all of 2024.
Under $100.
Yeah. See, it's hard.
It is hard. Yeah. It's easy to ask the question, but
it's like, I don't buy a lot of things. So I'm trying to.
Any drum accessories?
Yeah, but those are like, they're not like my favorite thing. It's like, they're new toys and I
sure.
like messing. But and what accessory can you get for under $100 in the drum world? Besides like a beater or something.
Yeah. Well, okay.
Shout out to Lowboy Beaters, our sponsor.
I've got a, actually, how much was that pillow? Well, no, I bought that a little bit before that. I was going to say, I bought this cooling pillow and it was around $100.
Okay.
And that's a game changer for me because when I sleep, I have a hell of a time sleeping. My body temperature just goes freaking through the freaking roof. So
gotcha.
having a cooling pillow is like heaven for me. I've never made a purchase in my entire life.
I've never bought anything.
Send us your bank account statement. Yeah. We'll find that purchase.
Listen, I'll go through and find. That sounds interesting.
Actually, that is.
Yeah, yeah. Like, what was this? What's this?
There's
what
was that about? $2. Yeah.
Can you imagine how annoying and invasive that would be? So what was that? Listen, dude, I don't even know why I did your podcast.
I will say, I got a cool
Stop
jacket.
Texting, yeah.
I like clothes and fashion and stuff. I got a cool vintage, like this old like football. I almost wore it today, but I was like, I just wore it in this other thing. I'll go back to the old trusty. But it's like this. I got it at this vintage store in LA, and it's like a 1986 like. Football, like jacket, you know, like classic, not like a Letterman's jacket, but like a kind of like a coach's jacket. And it's awesome. Like, it's like,
did you ever
like,
play football?
I did. Yeah.
I see you as a quarterback.
Right? I played.
Do you see that, Nate?
I was actually like defensive. I played like free safety.
Well, never mind. Okay.
And corner. But I played a little wide receiver, but no, can't throw the ball that well.
Yeah.
Like, not quarterback worthy.
No.
At all.
No.
But I would say that jacket. And it was $50. And I was like, this jacket's only $50. And it's from 1986. This thing's awesome.
Perfect.
All right, there we go.
And finally, where do you want people to follow you?
Me personally, you can follow me at Bo Knows Drums. And that's the handle for everything, all of it.
And then Small Pools.
And then at Small Pools. And that's for everything too. All the, that's it.
That's
very,
it.
Very easy.
Yeah, man. So April 7th, you said you're playing in Nashville?
April 7th at Basement East.
Basement East. Okay. Well, everyone check it out. So good having you on.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me. Seriously. Dude. I'm a fan. I watch them all and like, I love what you guys are doing and I think it's going to be
really.
Dude,
I appreciate
that.
I will say like we notice everyone that is like commenting or engaging.
Yeah.
Instagram or TikTok, and that does really go a long way.
It's just cool because it's like I see a lot of these guys around town, and whether I know them personally or not, it's like it's just cool to hear everybody's story and where they came from and why they're here and what they're doing. And you know, it's especially in our little like drummer world, it's because we all have different backgrounds but also have this similar bond of like playing drums and all kind of grew up at least learning about the drums and what it all is, you know, similarly. So it's cool. I think everyone has a unique story and it's a cool podcast.
Dude, you've said it perfectly. That's why we started this thing. So now you're a part of it. So we appreciate
love
it.
Well, I appreciate you having me.
Awesome, man.
Yeah. Thank you for being here.
Absolutely. It was a joy.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the National Drummers Podcast.
If you've enjoyed these podcasts, please consider supporting us on Patreon. For $5 a month, you can help support this dream and keep the ball rolling for us. Believe it or not, it's not free or even necessarily cheap for us to make this thing go. To sign up, go to patreon.com/Nashville Drummers Podcast or click the link in our Instagram bio. All of your help is greatly appreciated.
Check out our new website, NashvilleDrummersPodcast.com. And if you're not already following us on Instagram, you can follow us at Nashville Drummers Podcast. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you in the next episode.